Good evening and welcome to El Oso Fumar Takes. This is our 98th take live from Euless, Texas. I'm your host, Bear Duplessis, as always, and I'm so proud, so pleased, and so privileged to be with you all tonight. I got a fantastic show for you. It is our 98th take, and I've got an amazing guest teed up for tonight, and it's going to be a sensational time. I've been looking forward to this take for a really long time, so I'm really excited that you all could join us this evening. But before we do get started, and before I do introduce our esteemed guests, we do have to thank the people that make this show possible, and that, of course, is our sponsors. And tonight's show is sponsored by Drew Estate. Earlier last month, Drew Estate announced the release of the Herrera Esteli Norteño Edition Limitada. Drew Estate announced that they would be re-releasing the famed cigar that is a favorite among all cigar connoisseurs and retailers alike. It was originally released in 2015. The Herrera Esteli Norteño Edición Limitada showcases extensively aged tobaccos from the Esteli and Jalapa regions of Nicaragua. Coupled with the spicy Honduran binder and rich, bold Mexican San Andreas wrapper, packaged in 15-count boxes, this 7x48 box press Churchill features a unique Norteño blend allowing for a smoother and complex smoke. Drew Estate Master Blender Willie Herrera notes, the Norteño Edición Limitada is a killer stick, bro. At all of my events, consumers come up and ask when it's coming back. Well, I'm happy to say that this limited release will satisfy some of the demand, but they better grab them before they disappear. So check out your Drew Diplomat retailer for the Herrera Esteli Norteño Edición Limitada. We really appreciate you guys for tuning in tonight, whether you're watching us on Facebook Live. But if you're catching us later, wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, or wherever you listen to podcasts, remember that you're listening to us exclusively because of Cornelius and Anthony Premium Cigars. Cornelius and Anthony Premium Cigars is steeped in tobacco tradition. For over 150 years, the Bailey family has been part of America's tobacco heritage, passionately caring for the land they cultivate in Keysville, Virginia. Cornelius and Anthony's devotion to the finest grown tobacco and foremost aspects of craftsmanship allows them to introduce the most exquisite cigars to the market. They invite you to enjoy their portfolio of premium hand-rolled cigars and experience their dedication to producing an exceptional product. So good evening and welcome to Take 98. I am so proud and so excited. Like I said, been looking forward to this take for a really long time. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce our esteemed guest for this evening, Mr. Bradley Rubin of Alec and Bradley Cigars. Bradley, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Bear. Thank you very much for having me tonight on your 98th show, getting to 100.
Had to get you into one of the first 100 shows, man. It had to happen. Right. It had to happen. Especially with the scheduling difficulties that we had getting this teed up and everything. So,
yeah, you know, a lot of people are, you know, I was traveling in Vegas, and then I was down in Pittsburgh and Detroit and Ohio. So a 10-day trip where I was able to come on the show, but happy to make it for the end of the year.
Absolutely, man. I can't believe that you're still standing after the schedule you're telling me about. So what was it like being at the Big Smoke? Was that your first one?
That is now my third year in a row.
Oh wow. Okay, so you're a veteran. So for those of our audience that like have never been, because I've actually never been either, mm-hmm. I just know a lot about it. Tell us a little bit about what that experience is like.
So there's obviously you have your cigar vendors, which all of them are ones that sponsor with Cigar Aficionado, and then you have whiskey and tequila. They have food, and then there's about, I believe, 2,000 to 3,000 people each day, and however many tickets they get their booklet of tickets, and they give you a ticket, you get your cigar. They have their VIPs, they get in early so they can run to whoever they want to see first. Rocky usually has a pretty big line, we usually have a pretty decent line as well, so a lot of people are splitting up and dividing, conquering, and trying to get, you know, through those long lines as early as possible, get all your cigars, go enjoy the food, go enjoy the drinks, and it's a good time. And then you got Vegas. Can't go wrong with Vegas.
So I hear mixed reaction about people like when they go to Vegas and stuff. So like, I think there's like this, either people love Vegas or they don't like Vegas. I don't think there's like anywhere like necessarily like in between. I mean, you've been you've been often before you were legally allowed to do anything and stuff. So, I mean, you've spent a lot of time there. What are your impressions of Vegas in general?
It depends on the type of person you are. And even if you think that Vegas is this crazy party 24/7, which it is, you can go find your spots that are quiet, relaxing, and kind of have it. I think everyone can have their own experience, but for the people that don't like the crazy experience, they think that's what the only thing that Vegas is. But there's so many parts that are off the strip as well where you can have a good time, have a different experience. I mean, go to the Grand Canyon a couple hours away. Obviously, it's not Vegas, but there's plenty of stuff to do there. And I think people only think that only one thing happens in Vegas.
Well, whatever it is, that they always, as they say, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I totally agree with you, though. It has become a lot more family friendly and stuff. But it, you probably don't even notice this thing because you don't have children. And I'm going to sound like an old man here. But the one thing that still blows my mind the last couple of years that we've been out there for the trade show is, like, we'll be out, you know, we'll be wrapping up, you know, after parties and events, and we'll be heading out, you know, we'll be heading back home like 2 o'clock in the morning, which is still relatively early in, by Vegas standards, right? But like the thing that still blows my mind is, like, there'll be parents walking around with their kids in strollers at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, oh my. Like, I try not to judge anyone by, you know, just in general, but like, man, that makes it really hard.
Yeah. I mean, when you have a baby and you're going around Vegas, it's not the most practical thing to do. Probably not the smartest thing to do. But to each their own, I guess. I hope that's not me in the future.
Well, actually, bro, speaking of the trade show, you know, this was the second trade show for Alec and Bradley, Cigar specifically. And you guys released your second release last year, of course, was The Blind Faith. Very aptly named. Love the name. I think I go back to it every time I think about that cigar, and I'm like, just what a killer name to come out, you know, swinging for the fences with. It was awesome. Really, really well done. The cigar is incredible. I really enjoy it. But thank you guys, it's what we're actually smoking tonight. I'm smoking the Toro format. You're smoking the Corona, which I told you that I've been really enjoying lately. But The Gatekeeper is the second release from Alec and Bradley. I mean, as the story goes, Brad, we've been talking about this cigar. I mean, I think the moment that it did, I touched our hands this past summer. Blend, you know, you guys worked with the legendary Ernesto Perez Carrillo Jr. So why don't you give us the rundown on this cigar and how, from your perspective, how it was born and why we're enjoying it today?
Yeah. So the story is not necessarily a long story, but it took a long time in the making. So for me, I'm a big fan of Ernesto's cigars. I know you are as well.
Yes. I know Coop makes fun of me all the time, calls me a fanboy.
I know he is one of your favorites, if not your favorite. And so after I graduated college and I started working at Alec Bradley, I wanted to start smoking everything. I was only smoking Alec Bradley during college. And so I started making my way through some cigar lines. And eventually I got to EP Carrillo, tried about five or six different cigars from EP Carrillo, fell in love with the Dusk and fell in love with the La Astoria. And I was a fanboy as well. Later to come, I believe it was my first or second Cigar Fest. And my father is speaking with Ernesto, and I fanboy. And I'm like, But I see that it's a serious conversation, and I know not to walk up and disturb them. And I've always thought that Ernesto was kind of like a grumpy man. He doesn't look like the most approachable person in the world. And so I asked my dad, like, you're friends with Ernesto? And he's like, yeah, like, we're good friends and blah, blah. And I was like, do you think he would want to make a cigar with us? And he's like, maybe, like, I'll talk to him. And he was interested, and that obviously got me very excited. And then later to come was Cigar of the Year, and my father calls to congratulate him. And Ernesto asked my father, what do I do now? And he said, stay at the factory, make sure production is going smoothly, and only focus on yourself. And he said, well, I still want to work on the cigar with Alec and Bradley. So that was kind of when it started. A officially, and then only to go down to the Dominican, go to Miami to his offices, you know, work on the cigar, kind of go off of some stuff that I like of his, and same with Alec, that we both really appreciated. Both love his TAA cigar as well. And so we went with
the previous years, right? Not the box press last story, mm-hmm. but the one with the the Habano stock cut. Yeah, that was that was a good smoke too.
Exactly. So we love the profile of that cigar. Kind of wanted to not do something similar, but in terms of a base, and then we wanted to use a wrapper that is known very well to Ernesto, which was the Ecuadorian Habano, and then, you know, want to make an emphasis on some Dominican tobacco. So we wanted to do something completely different than what Alec Bradley has been doing. Alec Bradley hasn't made a cigar with Dominican tobacco in it for at least 12 to 15 years. So that's kind of been an emphasis for us, is give for Alec and Bradley, is to offer something that Alec Bradley doesn't offer. So getting to work with a legendary cigar maker like Ernesto is an unbelievable experience. Absolute genius. And contrary to what I believed when I first met Ernesto, he's the nicest person in the world, loves to laugh, great person to just be around.
For what it's worth, Bradley, I had a similar impression too, is that not necessarily grumpy or anything like that, just but yeah, just he's a force, right? He's a force to be right. Yeah. And so it was kind of like, it was that more respect more than anything else. It's not fear. It's just, you know, respect for everything. But yeah, when you get to talking with him, he's incredibly warm and genuine and absolutely sincere. Mm-hmm. I think that's true of a lot of folks in this industry, which is probably why your father and him are friends too, and go way back, is because mm-hmm. of that sincerity and everything. You know, so let's talk about the cigar here, the Gatekeeper, and we talked about this at the summer, we talked about this afterwards, Bradley. I felt that this was one of the stars of the show. Really, really just a fantastic, well put together, complex cigar. Starting with the wrapper, Ecuador and Habano, man, this thing, I mean, when you pick it up, I mean, everyone's probably got to assume that it's a Maduro. I mean, just mm-hmm. really dark and oily, rich kind of leather component to it. What made you guys hone in on, you said that you wanted to work with something he was familiar with, but what made you hone in on this particular wrapper to follow up on what you guys did with the Blind Faith?
Yeah, it's interesting. For the Blind Faith, because it was our first cigar, we wanted to go bold. We wanted to make sure that people, whether you liked it or not, you were going to remember it, whether it was the cigar itself or the artwork, which, same with this, we still want our work to always be memorable. But the something that is important to me when releasing cigar, and I'm sure it's important to everyone, is you want it to be able to stick around. You don't want people to fall in love with it and then, you know, what's new and what's next. You want to make sure that it's there to stay. And so I wanted to go for a little bit more of a classic profile than the Blind Faith, which was a, you know, look at me cigar, we're gonna kick you in the butt with some nicotine. So I think the Ecuadorian Habano added that classic leather taste that you described earlier. I think it, for me, especially in the Corona, is a classic cigar, which I think I could smoke forever.
I'm normally, Coop and I go back and forth on this, my partner on Primetime Special Edition. Mm-hmm. Go back and forth on this, man. I'm a small gauge guy. I really prefer to smoke Bustos. Corona is my jam. I love Lanceros. Yeah. I think, you know, I just think they're dynamite. He'll smoke anything too. And we both will smoke anything. I give him a hard time because he's a big gauge guy. And mm-hmm. so when we were talking about the Gatekeeper, and of course he's like, hey, have you smoked it in the 60 yet? I'm like, yes, I have. And dude, the Corona's better. they're different cigars. Even the same blend, but different cigar.
It's funny you say that, because I prefer the Corona. I believe my brother prefers the Corona as well. And maybe even my dad, but none of us are big ring gauge. We don't smoke 60s very often, but my father prefers the Gatekeeper in the Gordo. He even brought home a box. He smoked it. He goes, I think that the Gatekeeper smokes best in the Gordo, and I will smoke it in that format because it smokes the best.
Fair enough. You mean you guys aren't lighting up Texas Lanceros like all day, every day at the office? I mean,
I don't think there's enough time in the day to light one up all day, every day. That's like you got a 3-hour drive. You know, Orlando's 3 hours away. So if you're going to smoke a cigar for 3 hours, it might as well be a Texas Lancero.
There you go. Speaking of your dad, you know, it's interesting. It has to be interesting growing up in the industry a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in depth, but I wanted to hear his response to the cigar. So he likes the Gordo, but what were his initial feelings about you wanting to, you know, break away completely from what had been, what has become their staples, and can, you know, find this partnership of someone he's never partnered with or anything. They might be good friends, but he's never done that. And then also dabble with tobaccos that, you know, haven't been in the Alec Bradley portfolio, as you mentioned, for over a decade. Mm-hmm. What was his initial reaction, and what did you guys take away from those conversations?
He was definitely excited. He was happy that we wanted to work out of the people that we had in mind. He was happy that we decided to work with Ernesto, and that he was as well excited to work with us. There was definitely no qualms there. He was extremely excited, but he knew. Not that he knew, but when working with a different factory and a different person that you've never worked with before, there could be issues. You never know what's going to come up. The cigar industry, it happens quite often. And not that we knew anything was going to happen, but, you know, he warned us that things are going to be different. Things will be handled differently. Prices, whatever, might be a little bit more expensive coming up Dominican, not going with a factory that we all been using forever. But he thought it was a great idea and said, go for it. You know, this is your guys' decision. It's your brand. What you want to do with it is your choice. So, be prepared for growing pains, but, you know, do your best. And he was really happy for us.
That's terrific. It had to be, I would love to actually ask him that question, because I think it would have to be like this mix of emotion. If I were him, you know, it'd have to be this kind of mix of emotion of like, here's something here, I've had tremendous success, and then here are my boys who I'm extremely proud of doing their own thing. You know, like that, I would be like, God, just in an emotional tear, just trying to figure out how I would feel. It would be a total mind fuck probably about it. But it's obvious that he's been supportive of you all from the very beginning. But it's also something you guys have also built on your own, just with the guise of him. But this is something you guys built from the ground up yourselves with your own money and everything. And that's, I think in part, that's why, that's giving you the freedom to kind of explore in your all's own way and everything. So, before we go again, we're going to bounce around kind of like timelines we usually do here on this show. I do want to talk a little bit, one last thing about the show. At the show, as I mentioned, this was kind of a cigar that captured a lot of attention. Now, it wasn't just me, but a lot of folks were talking about the cigar, had a little bit of the buzz, as they say, the B word at the show. And there was a lot of talk about it and everything. What were your initial feelings at the show? And then immediately after, what was kind of the reaction about this particular cigar as you announced it to the world?
Yeah, it definitely felt way more positive during the show and post show compared to Blind Faith. I think that from what I've heard, you know, from you and from other people, is that we stepped up our game from Blind Faith to Gatekeeper. And I would probably agree with that as well. I remember post-show, you and Coop talking, and I believe you referred to it as a dark horse from the show, which I really appreciated. Just for people to be talking about us is unbelievable to me. I know that we get a little bit, if not a good amount of help being from Alec Bradley and everything that my father's done, but the fact that people are putting focus on us and talking fairly highly of Gatekeeper has been an unbelievable feeling. Just the fact that people are enjoying the cigar is what's most important. So it's it was a great show, and I think we did much better than we did with Blind Faith the year before.
As we were kind of joking around about before the show, talking about Blind Faith in particular, it's a limited production cigar, not a limited edition. Yeah. So therefore it is available.
Yes.
And in fact, call now for orders. But it's available now. And now this cigar is obviously a regular production item as well. Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's been the response as it's kind of gotten into retailers, and it's because it's been into retailers for about 2.5 months now, kind of?
Yeah, 2.5-3 months. Same with Blind Faith, but better. There's shops that have been doing extremely well with it, and some that it doesn't move as well. There's always going to be certain clientele, certain customers that, whether it be the price or the artwork, whatever it may be, some people have been doing extremely well, getting reorders multiple times, which is, I pay attention to that stuff on a daily basis, and seeing a shop's name come up a couple times it gets you excited for sure. But the whole country is so different. A shop down the street can be flying through it, and one on the other side of the street may not be able to move a box. But people are at least willing to try it and give us a shot. And I so far haven't seen any negative feedback, which is nice. People like to give negative feedback over positive feedback a lot of the times. You see a lot of worse, a lot of bad Yelp reviews compared to good Yelp reviews.
So, of course.
It's when people are upset, you definitely hear about it. When people are happy, they're very quiet. So.
No news is good news, right?
Exactly. So no complaints in terms of how slow or fast the cigars are moving or any good or bad reviews. So I'm very happy so far with how everything has been going.
I think my take on, and I didn't smoke the Blind Faith until actually this year. I didn't get a chance to smoke it last year. And and I think that from my perspective, I think that the thing about these two cigars that we've been talking about, and you guys in general, is that these cigars really made they were statement cigars. They made a statement. It wasn't it wasn't the there's nothing wrong with this model, but I mean, there are different models of introducing cigars to the market, particularly with new brands, right? I mean, there's the let's do the Connecticut, the Sun Grown, the Maduro model. Let's do the three Vitola line and everything. There's nothing wrong with that. That's worked for a long time. And then there's other people have had good success with lesser degrees in terms of introducing cigars to the market. And I think this is a prime example and a great mixture of the two. You guys didn't get overly crazy on Vitolas, and you kept it very simple with one cigar, and you didn't even go anywhere near the Connecticut, which is the world's most popular cigar. Although that befuddles most nerds and most of my audience for that matter, and me too, to a certain extent, but that's still the world's most popular cigar. But you guys could have played it safe and done that, probably done extremely well on the numbers racket, but you guys made a statement, I think, with these two blends, and they've been nothing but well received.
Yeah. If we could come out with small ring gauge and funky sizes, that would be great. But from what I've learned and seems to be the trend, those don't always sell, and you have to have Robusto Toro Gordo. So we somewhat stick to that model. Obviously, we did that with Blind Faith to somewhat play it safe after putting out very unsafe artwork. And then with Gatekeeper, we thought that the blend would work extremely well in a Corona size. Ernesto, obviously not known for making small ring gauge, but we thought it would be a fun challenge for him as well. And it took a couple tries, but I think he knocked it out of the park. And again, would love to introduce more Lanceros and more Coronas and more Salamones or Perfectos and, you know, interesting sizes. That, I mean, to put out something interesting and unique is always the goal, but unfortunately,
gotta keep the lights on,
things,
right?
things gotta sell, and gotta be, you know, making money and not spending money. So always gotta try and keep a Bucetoro Gordo, and then add in the sizes that make people want to, you know, pick up something completely different that they've never seen before and be like, ooh, you know, that's something that really interests me.
Well, not to get too cute here, Bradley, but I mean, would you say that almost that the gatekeeper was almost a lot of blind faith? Again, here's, your guys are dabbling in Dominican tobacco. Mm-hmm. Ernesto's doing a vitola that he's not necessarily used. There was a lot of faith on both of each other's parts there.
Yeah. I mean, I trust Ernesto with every bone in my body. I know that he's not going to do anything to compromise the cigar. That's why it took a little bit longer for it to come out than we would have liked. Also weird issues with shipping from the Dominican, and some box issues as well. But those were kind of the growing pains that I was talking about earlier. But this is what happens. Never expect anything to go right the first time. Always plan for some headaches and some mistakes to happen. But yeah, I would agree. A lot of blind faith in the second project as well. Ernesto and us, we got to do something kind of different than the norm as usual.
So we actually have an interesting question from the chat here, and I normally take a lot of questions or anything, but I'm interested to get your take on this. What do you think about companies that do launch like four different vitolas for one particular blend? Do you think that that's, you know, I mean, to each their own, or what's your particular take on that?
You said four different vitolas for one blend?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, give people options. Everyone, the more options, the better. Everyone likes something different. Some people like the standard 50-52 Robusto and Toro. Some people are dedicated to the Gordos. We're always going to pick up a Lancero or Corona if it comes in that cigar. Some people want even bigger than 60s. So the more sizes, the better, in my opinion. Never decide to like not put something out. The more choices, the better. But unfortunately, those smaller ring gauges or more unique sizes, you know, there may not be as many of them out there, but it's true. I think it's a great thing for people to have the option to choose what cigar and what size that they like.
Yeah, and like I was saying, you know, there's plenty of success and both types of models and everything, but what you guys did differently was I really applaud in that regard. We've kind of talked a little bit about your family, and you know, we haven't mentioned Alec at all tonight, and you know, I feel kind of bad about that, except for I don't really feel bad because he hasn't really accepted my friend request on Facebook yet. As we found out earlier this year, he doesn't have a Facebook account, so I'm still offended that he hasn't gotten in touch with this Alec Bradley that I did ask to be friends with to get him to accept a friend request. That's still pending. So, I mean, still blaming your brother on that. But all joking aside, you know, growing up in this business, you have a different story than a lot of the other sons that I've talked to. You know, their fathers are, you know, second, sometimes third generation folks that have been in the industry and everything. And you guys are second generation, which is certainly nothing to sneeze at. That's amazing. I think it's awesome that when your father started this company, naming his company after his sons, a couple decades later, you know, his sons would pick up the baton and kind of run with it and carry the torch, so to speak. So, but mm-hmm. kind of growing up, did you, and when you were kind of, and we'll see what we were thinking about when we were talking about going into the cigar business, but did mm-hmm. you ever feel like you were in your father's shadow or even your brother's, when it came to cigars?
Not necessarily. Well, everyone in the industry has been very welcoming of me. I remember my first big smoke, and my father was talking to, you know, a bunch of very well-known cigar makers and some other people that I didn't necessarily know, but kind of a group of five or six people, and not necessarily anyone said, hi, nice to meet you, who are you, whatever. Maybe they knew I was my father's son or not. But, you know, now that I've been in the industry a little bit more, people know who I am. A lot of people have and do confuse me with Alec all the time. We do look somewhat similar, but not, I don't believe that similar, but 50-50 chance. But I don't think I'm in the shadow of my father or Alec. But, you know, my father's been doing this for a long time. And as we've talked before the show, a lot of success and that, you know, some of his failures as well. But yeah, I mean, he's done a lot, and hopefully I can do something similar or more, or just up to par. That's always the goal. But just to leave a mark on the industry is what I hope to achieve at some point.
You know, as we kind of talked about before the show, Bradley, we wanted to, you know, as much as you and Alec are a team and part of the Alec Bradley team itself, you know, as a whole, and you got amazing people that you work with on a daily basis and everything. The reason I like to break up partnerships on these takes is because I like to get the person's perspective. You know, while, you know, when a team is together that works, it's great. And there's nothing, you know, you guys have obviously had success and that's been tremendous. I like to get the individual person's perspective on it and where they're actually coming from and everything, because, you know, yeah, as much as you can be on the same page with somebody, especially your own brother, there's always personal motivation involved with what you're trying to do. So, you know, so to that point, why cigars, Bradley? Why did you want to follow in the footsteps, man? What was it about this industry that drew you in?
Well, ever since I was little, my father, as he traveled and worked and made the time that he could for me and my brother and my mom, whenever my father was home and he would go in the backyard and smoke a cigar, there I was, there Alec was, always trying to spend time with him and talk and learn as much as we could. And I remember I was probably 13, 14 years old, maybe a little bit younger. And I asked my dad, like, you go to Honduras and Nicaragua, like, can I work? Can I go with you? And he's like, absolutely not. It definitely wasn't necessarily the most safe place in the world. And he wasn't about to bring his young teenager to, Don Lee, Honduras. But just the appreciation for what my father has done for my family and for, I would even say, for other families and the people that he employs. And I remember around that time when I was 13, 14, and my father's best friend said to me, you know, your dad, he makes a lot of people happy with this. And I think that's when I really understood what it is that my father did. And I think that is give people the time to relax or be happy or whatever it is that you get out of cigar. That's kind of what it was for me, is my father's provided me and my brother and my mom so much and so many opportunities and fun and cool things to do and people to meet. And if I have the opportunity, if for whenever I have kids, if I have the opportunity to do that for them, then I'm happy. That's what really drew me in, is the possibilities of what I could do in the future.
You know, on this Sunday, you know, yesterday was actually Small Business Saturday, and Small Business Saturday means a lot to me as an individual. My father owned a small business for a time. My grandfather owned many small businesses throughout his lifetime. In my day job, I work with small business owners, and the same could be said about this job too. I talk to small business owners all the time, and not to rekindle the debate that the three of us had on a previous show about, you know, boutique cigars, not getting into that. We're not getting into that tonight. Mm-hmm. But there has to be something you said caught my attention. the ability of what your father has done and built and what you now are doing in creating livelihoods for not only yourselves, but for so many, it has to be just incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, I think it's satisfying, and I think it's very daunting. I think my father, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think it's not something that hangs over his head, but it's definitely in the back of his head. He realizes how the people that we employ in our, 10, 11 salespeople, and then 12, 13 in the office, and then the people in Honduras and Nicaragua. Rises Cubanas being our kind of our main home factory in Don Lee, Honduras, and the many, many pairs of rollers and people that work there and all the people involved with Rises. There's, I think my father takes a little bit of not ownership, but responsibility and making a good cigar that sells well and that people can make as much as they can of and, keep people employed. Because in Honduras, they're so happy just to have jobs. And if we can, keep their jobs and provide more jobs, then that is, like you said, a very satisfying and a very good feeling to have when you employ people. It's pretty special.
I might be answering my own question here as I kind of navigate through this next one, but we've spoken a lot about your father tonight, and no doubt it has to be, as a father and from what you've spoken about him too, I know he's immensely proud of you, both you and Alec, and this company that he started over a couple decades ago, naming his own company after the two of you. Lo and behold, years later, here you guys are making your own cigars. It brings about the question that I've always, and I told you, I don't want you to answer. I told you this was going to be a question before the show, but I didn't want you to tell me the answer because I wanted to have a natural reaction to it. So, but why keep the name Alec and Bradley?
So there's a couple reasons. The first is the most simple. One, I don't think I could have thought of a better one. We thought of some names.
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit there, but okay.
and then there's also the issue, which I think everyone kind of in the industry knows that we have, is that everyone thinks that my father is Alec Bradley. So by making our company Alec and Bradley, people will start to question, like, oh, I thought it was Alec Bradley. Maybe do a little bit of research on the phone, check out Wikipedia and say, oh, Alan Rubin is the owner. He decided to name the company after his two sons. So a little bit of an education course as well, so we can, get Alec and Bradley so people know who we are, understand the story of how the company started and why it was named after us, and just kind of have everything come together. And now that my father is not traveling as much, and Alec and I are both on the road now more often, people can now know who we are, get excited about coming to our events and trying some of our cigars. So a little bit of a crash course for people that don't know the story of Alec Bradley.
Speaking of the beginnings of Alec Bradley, I want to make it one of our life's missions to sit down together, the three of us, and share some bogey stogies is what we need to find.
I don't think we could find those anywhere in the world. My father has zero. I've never been to even places that have a bunch of old stuff lying around. Alec usually finds those places too. But I've never seen one. I've never seen anyone smoke one. I don't know. I know very little about that cigar at all, but I actually did bring, cause I always try and bring and smoke something special on the shows, whether you're on the coop or whoever it may be. So after I am almost done finishing this Gatekeeper, and I've never smoked this before, I will be smoking a Trilogy Exotic Maduro.
Oh man.
It's not the triangle press, but it is a torpedo. I've never had it before. So I hopefully it hasn't lost anything. So I'm excited.
What a blast from the past that is. Woof. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Absolutely. You know, that's, I'm glad there was more of a reason, because I was afraid that it was like, well, it's my name, Bear, so I can name it whatever I can name the company whatever I want. And it's true. But I think, again, kind of go back to what we were talking about with these two cigar blends, was that, you know, being a statement, it kind of was very bold in a sense. You might have seen it as easy, but, you know, a natural thing. But I think it was bold to say, you know what, we're going to continue this, but it's going to be us now. It's going to be, you know, us as individuals. Not just part of Alec Bradley, but Alec and truly Alec and Bradley doing their own thing. I think that's incredible. I think my ignorance stems, as far as your father's concerned. I think that early on I was convinced that there was an accent somewhere, and then I would always pronounce his name Ruban. it's probably where the extent of where my ignorance lay in your family's history with cigars and everything. Yeah. But speaking of Alan, he's had tremendous success in this industry. Number one cigar of the year, just like Ernesto. So you have the distinction of working with two number one cigar makers, he's released several just fan favorites, staples in humidors around this country. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be hard pressed to go into any humidor in this country and not see an Alec Bradley product of some kind. So, I mean, that's a huge success into itself, you know, being a staple, a part of, you know, as part of any humidor and everything. But he's also had failures, like any businessman and anyone in life. You don't have to be a businessman to have failures. I've had failures up to here in my life. But, and I mentioned this before the show too, Bradley, that as much respect as I have for your father and his success, probably where I have garnered the most respect for him is how he handled probably what could be considered, he might answer this question differently, but what could be considered his biggest failure, which was, you know, the fallout after getting the number one cigar of the year. Mm-hmm. And the proverbial falling on the sword, doing the infamous article with Cigar Aficionado on dealing with the difficulties of production and everything. I won't go into the whole song and dance, but that's kind of the sum of it. My question is, what have you learned from his vast successes, and what have you learned from that pretty significant failure?
Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty eye-opening thing for me to hear. I was, I think, a sophomore in high school when he got number one, and, you know, with the post fallout. But those are the things that you take away. You learn a lot. Obviously, you learn a lot more from your failures than you do your success. So that's a big takeaway. And for me, it was one, being just honest with yourself and honest to the people that buy your cigars. So I think to do that was to, you know, get a lot off of his chest. I know that he told me, you know, helped him sleep at night. So that stuff doesn't go unnoticed. I still have at Big Smoke. I had someone mention the article last year. I stopped in at a Vegas shop, and a couple cops and chiefs of police are hanging out, smoking a cigar, and we kind of sparked up a conversation. And one of the officers was like, yeah, I read that article that your father did in Cigar Aficionado, Life After Number One, and his failures. And I just have the utmost respect and appreciation for what he did. Not a lot of people would want to do that. And so to hear it from, you know, I have my own personal feelings on it, and to have people come to me and mention it and have that same appreciation that you have, it shows character. And to take away that, the honesty and the genuineness of being a real person and not always trying to put up the front of being a successful company, but also showing your failures, and people respond to that a lot better than just the, you know, we make good cigars, and you know, we have a number one and a number five and whatever. It's all good to have the ratings, but to do a real article about a real person that had a real mistake or a real failure shows a lot more about his character.
I couldn't agree more. You know, you mentioned earlier, before we even got to this question, when we were talking about the responsibility of being a small business owner and how it, you use the word daunting. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, from things that I've read and I've heard him speak on it too, this was something that was keeping him up at night. And the responsibility that he felt not only to the end consumer who was purchasing his product, but also for the people that were working for him, he felt like he was failing on both fronts. And I mean, that is the weight of the world on a man's shoulders, if there ever was. I mean, feeling it from both ends, the pressure from both ends, and just being able to own it like that. I'm a big advocate of owning it. And I think that's why I have so much respect for him and everything. So when these people do come up and, you know, here I am, here's another guy just asking you about it. Like when it happens, like what's your initial reaction? And like, there has to be more positive people saying like what we're saying about it and what those chiefs of police said about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still, I mean, please tell me there aren't dickheads out there that are bringing it up and being like, being total douchebags about it, right? I mean,
no, I've never heard anyone bring up the article and be, you know, say anything negative. That's never happened to
me. Oh, thank God.
So I would be surprised, but
yeah, they're missing the point. I guess they'd be missing the point. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, I would hope that you as well haven't heard anything negative. I don't know if you have.
No, I have not. But, no.
Yeah, it's never happened. So I think most people take something good out of it and hopefully even learn something for themselves from it.
That's terrific. So with that, I mean, the question I have is if that failure didn't happen, mm-hmm. Does Alec and Bradley exist?
I would hope so. I think so. You know, who knows what path we would all still be down. I don't think the article for me changed anything in my head that I didn't already know. So
not necessarily the article, but the mm-hmm. lessons that he learned from it and therefore taught you guys about.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't think that, I mean, there's still people that will say that our construction is so poor and this and that. And I'm sure that they were probably smoking cigars from post number one cigar of the year. People don't forget that stuff and they stick to it forever. So I think we would still be around. I don't think that it was a band-aid that fixed all the problems, but I think it allowed, like I said, for my father to sleep at night, focus on what's important, on making good cigars, on growing the company, on putting out new releases. I think it took up a lot of headspace for him. So I think it allowed him to get back to what he was doing. So I think you see that with companies still that get number one and companies in the past that have gotten number one. I don't think that it's only happened to us. So I hope that future companies that get number one and maybe people that are still going through it, I hope they, you know, that they learn from it and that they take their time to make sure they're putting out good quality, even if it takes them God knows how long.
If people gave up on Alec Bradley after that, I got to say that they missed out on some great cigars. The Mundial, the Black Market, the Coil, particularly in the Petit Lancero that you and I favor so much.
One.
Fantastic, fantastic cigar. Love that Vitola.
Favorite cigar of all time.
They're truly missing out. So let's hope for those doubters out there that we reach them tonight and we get them to lend a little grace and come back into the fold a little bit. But
absolutely.
So we talked a lot about the past. We talked a lot about the present. Let's talk about the future here. You guys just mm-hmm. announced a cigar partnership with Cigar Dojo. Mm-hmm. the I hope I'm speaking of pronunciations tonight. I hope I'm not mispronouncing the Urudashi.
Urudashi.
So talk a little bit about how this project came to be and your thoughts on it from your perspective.
Yeah, so from when I started working, at the time we were actually, I believe, only working with Cigar Aficionado and Cigar Journal. And I had, once I started getting into cigars, I started looking at some media people, and I found some of the smaller guys, and I stumbled upon Dojo, and I thought they're, fun, cool group of guys and that I would get along with. And a little bit later, they finally came down to Florida. I think they're there for Espinosa Palooza, or La Zona Palooza. And so we're like, hey, let's, come to the office and let's do a show. And we had a great time, me and my brother and my dad, with the Dojo guys. So the friendship kind of started from there. And then while we were at this year's trade show, we were, I don't even know how it came up, but I just kind of threw an idea out there. I was like, hey, leap year is coming up. What would be awesome, doing a cigar that only comes out on leap year? I think it would be just the most unique thing in the world. And they were all about it, jumped on board right away. And so we started the project immediately after, now that Gatekeeper was coming out and we didn't have to focus as hard on getting it released. Production was coming in not too much longer after. And went through some blends with the Dojo guys, and it just worked out super simple, easy. Found a great cigar for the project, and I think coming out with something that you can only get once every 4 years will be a fun project to continue to work on and in the future.
So the and I know that some of the details have been released, but what can you tell us about the blend and where it's manufactured?
So it's being made at Rice Escribanos in Honduras. It's kind of got this great chocolatey flavor to it, a little bit medium plus, and our standard kind of 52x6 Toro. And I thought we gave them a couple options. I think Alec had his heart set out on this one. He was hoping they would pick it. I had something a little bit different in mind. But Eric and Jordan, they jumped on this blend, and they're like, this is definitely it. So they stuck with Alec on that, and I think it's going to work out great.
Tremendous. The I know that some of the releases that they've been doing as a team have just been so widely praised, and they've been able to do some really great things with a lot of different companies and stuff. So it's really mm-hmm. cool to see them breaking out of the fold too. Cause if I'm probably going to step in it here, I don't think they've done anything with a Honduran based manufacturer yet.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong about that. And I apologize to my friends at Dojo if that's the case, but that
I think you're right. I think you're right on that as well.
But come full circle on that. A little blind faith.
Little blind faith.
That's cool. So not necessarily with maybe media circles, but we talked obviously with your partnership with Ernesto, with the Gatekeeper and everything. Are you guys seeking any other partnerships with blending other future cigars? Is this something y'all have talked about? What does the future hold as far as that's concerned?
Right now, we've talked about it, and it's something that we definitely want to continue with. We think that people like to see different manufacturers working together. You kind of get two, good heads working on, or for our case, three good heads, hopefully, working on one project. And three people working on the same thing can make things a little bit more difficult. We think that comes to the best conclusion. That's why earlier when you were saying that Alec and I are a good team, I would say that we are and we aren't. We butt heads every single way until the finished product. But I think that gives us the best outcome. So yeah, continuing to work with different manufacturers and different brands that will provide us, again, something unique that Alec Bradley doesn't offer, and we can make something fun. That's a big focus for me and Alec, is to make cigars that are fun. I think sometimes that gets lost in some releases. I think this, you know, providing you know, story and maybe teaching someone something, you know, whatever it may be, which we're working on our next release right now, and it has a great story to it, and something that people can learn from. I think it has a life story to it, and I think that's something that is missed in some cigars nowadays, where yes, the cigar is the most important thing. That's the focus, but why not add something extra to that cigar if you can?
Absolutely. Will you be announcing that? Will that be announced prior to the trade show, or will that be announced at the trade show again?
I think we'll announce it prior to the trade show.
Terrific.
I think so.
Maybe
even release it before the trade show.
Terrific. Are you guys planning on going to TPE this year?
Alec Bradley will be there. I don't know if either me or Alec, I think one of us will go, but Alec Bradley will be present at TPE.
You know, speak about your partnership, though. I think I was actually having this discussion the other day about you two specifically. And in a society today that is so afraid of debate and discussion and disagreement, it's almost better to be partnered with your brother, who you've probably given shit to your entire life and taken shit from. Because at the end of the day, you're still brothers. Mm-hmm. And you still love each other. And so you guys can butt heads and disagree. And at the end of the day, you could still go, you know, you could still hug it out and, okay, agree to disagree or whatever, and work together to finish the project and everything. So I think if anything, that bodes well for your partnership over other partnerships of any kind, just because of the way society is today and everything.
Yeah, we're definitely stuck with each other, that's for sure.
Bradley, I really appreciate your time tonight. It's been an absolute mm-hmm. pleasure sitting down, chatting with you. I'm just so personally excited for the projects that you guys are putting together. What your company and what Alec Bradley is doing, I think is just doing so many positives for this industry. I just truly appreciate it from a consumer perspective, from a media perspective, and it's just something that I've really enjoyed. But before I let you go, we do have to do our curveball segment, which okay. I always tell people is kind of like a softball. Mm-hmm. It's not really a curveball or anything, but in the spirit, 'tis the season of Christmas and everything. This is the season of gifts and a gift giving, as well as gift taking and receiving, rather. So my question to you is if you could present mm-hmm. a present to any celebrity, so let's call it a celebrity. It doesn't have to be a cigar celebrity. It's just someone that's well known. What would be that Christmas present to them and why?
Wow.
So let's pick the celebrity and then pick the gift.
Okay.
And okay.
Celebrity. So, well, one of my favorite celebrities is a rapper, Action Bronson. He's kind of this jack of all trades, rapper, chef, has his own show. Just a weird, interesting dude. But the energy is just amazing. But in terms of the gift, that's the toughest part. That's a very interesting one.
He's that guy that I think he's with he's with Atlantic Records, right? I think he started out with like Warner Brothers or something. But he's known for hip hop, right?
Yeah, he's known for hip hop for sure. And then he has like his own TV shows where he eats around the world with his friends. So I would say I would take him to dinner. That would be the gift. And I would take him to our friend, her name's Chef Nicole. She has her own restaurant in Vegas called Locale. She used to run Mario Batali's restaurants in Vegas before he got Me Too'd. And So it's called Locale. It's off the strip. And she is just one of the most creative chefs. The meals are unbelievable. Me and my girlfriend, we celebrated our year anniversary at her restaurant for after Big Smoke. And she cooked for us. I think he actually has gone to her old restaurant, Carnabino. And so I would take him to the new restaurant and have her cook for us. So that would be my gift to the superstar Action Bronson.
Would there be at least one signature dish that you would make him try? What would it be? Does she have like a signature dish?
I wouldn't say she has a signature dish because she's always making something new. She's known for her like dry aging steak process, which
sounds terrible.
It's like aged like 8-9 months or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
It's an unbelievable experience. When you're there for the trade show next year, if you have time, I definitely recommend, all the cigar people love going to her. But she made this unbelievable like mushroom pizza for us, with, I don't know what kind of cheese it was, but it was very light cheese. But I don't like mushrooms at all, but it was, I think, the best part of the meal when we were just there. So she does it all.
That's really cool. It's really interesting that the relationships that kind of have formed like across these industries and stuff, like, I think of Javi Carranza of Plasencia and his friendship with Ed Reed, Gary Sheffield and Rocky Patel and there's this, all these cross culture relationships that stem and it all comes down to these, they are the world's greatest equalizer. I've said that so many times on the show. I've said that so many times on so many platforms. They bring so many people together. And everything. Yeah. So to cap off this meal, I'm going to keep going with this theme here. So what cigar would you want to smoke with Action Bronson?
Oh man.
Would you pull out the Gatekeeper, the Blind Faith, something from the hallowed chambers of Alec Bradley from years past? What do you think?
I would go for something I've only had one of. My father was given it at Cigar Fest. It was a Havana Sun Grown, Lonsdale, and so he was gifted to, my father gave him to me, and then about a month later brought him over to my father's and we smoked them together, and 15 years later it was just the most, it's a top five cigar I've ever had. Just incredible flavor still, even though it's kind of a light cigar, the strength was still there, complexities were there. There are places where you can still find them. So if you ever are out on the road and stumble across, I think Alec even has a box or two. So I'll snag some from his box that he thinks everyone touches, but no one's ever touched before. I'll jump in there. I'll grab you one, send it over to you, whatever it is. But it's a necessary thing to try if you ever get the chance.
Sounds amazing. He likes to chase those down, man. He's kind of a hunter, isn't he?
Yeah. And then also, which I have failed to mention, the 2019 Find and Wear. I don't know if you've tried it yet or if your store will be getting them or has gotten them, but it is just a home run. I think it's the best or maybe second best Find and Wear that we've ever released. Has my grandfather's picture on it. He passed away about a year ago now. So we released it on the day of his death, on November 15th. So it's the first box press we've ever done as well. So for Find and Rare. So I think that's also one that I would give to him. The box is beautiful and it really embodies my grandfather. So it's been very well accepted. People I've seen online that are like, I'm not Alec Bradley fans, but this is a killer cigar. It's been very well taken so far, and I think it's a pretty special cigar.
You know, I have to say, I mean, this isn't just because you're on here, Bradley, in another one smoker way. The Fine and Rare series is probably has to be the, if not the most underrated, one of the most underrated series that's out there, that's been out there in continuous production in its capacity. You know, it's a limited every year and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably the most underrated, because I think some of the finest cigars that Alec Bradley has done have been in that series. I mean, just mm-hmm. really, really well done. So if you hold this cigar in that high regard, no, I have not had it yet. Okay. Definitely need to try that as well. Mm-hmm. Was released a couple of weeks ago, so it should be making its way to your local retail. Should check it out for sure. And check out the Gatekeeper. And of course, the Blind Faith. Two tremendous cigars. They're two original releases from Alec and Bradley. And if you can snag them, do so. It's going to be an exclusive to Smoke In, right? The Urudashi will be an exclusive to Smoke In.
Yes.
In collaboration with Cigar Dojo. So check that out. Our good mm-hmm. friends over there at Dojo and at Smoke In for that particularly fine cigar. Available this leap year only.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Great, great concept. Bradley, thank you so much for sitting down with me tonight. You've been running ragged the last few weeks, and to cap it all off, this was Thanksgiving week, and for you to sit down with me, it was just an absolute treat and a pleasure. I know you're anxious to spend some time with that amazing girlfriend of yours, and so I won't keep you from it too much longer. But thank you to our audience for sticking with us tonight. We had a great time talking with Bradley Rubin of Alec and Bradley Cigars. Check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to subscribe, download, review, all that stuff. I hear if you actually unsubscribe and then resubscribe, it actually does some positive stuff for me. Just don't forget to resubscribe. That's key. That's key. You don't miss the mark on that. But guys, this has been our 98th take. I've done 98 of these, and I've talked to amazing people like our esteemed guest tonight, Mr. Bradley Rubin, who's just each week kind of gets better and better, talking to more and more amazing people. We got two unique takes coming up. Our 99th take, I welcome in for the very first time Mr. William Cooper, and welcome back Mr. Aaron Loomis. We're going to be talking about the history of Cigar Coop Prime Time and how that came to be, and how that is changing cigar podcasts for the better. So I'm really excited to have them on. And of course, my 100th take will be with Mr. Pete Johnson of Tatuaje Cigars on December 22nd. It's going to be awesome. And as I've been closing out these last few takes, we're on the road to 100. I really appreciate everyone for tuning in. All your likes, comments, and shares. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking again with Bradley Rubin of Alec and Bradley Cigars. I'm Bear Duplessis, live from Euless, Texas. This was our 98th take in the books. Guess what, everyone? We'll see you next time.